Parsha Shoftim. There are a couple things I want to discuss in the Parsha itself. Some ideas of the Parsha Shoftim has a tremendous number of mitzvos in it, and some very big concepts which are quoted or discussed in great length amongst the Chachamim and the Gemaras. And then I also want to talk a little bit about it being Chodesh Elul, a little bit about the mentality one comes into to preparing for Hashanah Yom Kippur, and we can connect a little bit to the Parsha if time permits. So, starting near the beginning of the Parsha, in Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Ches. So I'm going to go through the following Pesukim, Ches through Yud Gimel, a little fast, and I'm going to focus then on one particular Pasuk where there's a lot to discuss. So it says, Ki Yipalei Mimcha Davar, if something becomes, Yipalei, like a Pele, is a wonder. So Rashi explains something which is separate and apart, and hidden, something which was not clear. La Mishpat, to be in a matter of judgment, being dam le dam, if it's between two different types of blood, Rashi explains between blood that's tar versus dam that's tameh, that would make somebody tar or tameh. Being din le din, to between two verdicts, if the person should merit or be chayiv, should be found guilty. Being nega le nega, two different types of afflictions, if it makes him tameh or tahor. Divrei rivos bisharecha, things which there would be a dispute in your gates, meaning that the Chachamim, the rabbis, the beis din in your community are having issues. They can't figure out what to do, right? The kamta valisa elamakom, and you should go up, you should ascend and go up to the place asher yivchar Hashem lokechabo, which Hashem, your God, has chosen for him. Uvas el ha-kohanim ha-levim ve-la-shovid, you'll come to the kohanim, the levim, and to the judge, asher yeh ba-yamim ahim, which were there in those times, v'darashta, and you will inquire, v'yigidu lecha, and they will tell to you, eis devar ha-mishpat, the ruling. So number one, Rashi points out, asher yeh ba-yamim ahim, which were in those times, meaning, it's, don't feel like, well, you know, we live nowadays, but if I would have lived 1,000 years ago, then those judges were so much better, I'm not going to believe the judges of my time. He says, no, each judge you believe and go according to the time period that you're living in, those are your judges for your generation, and those are the ones that you have to abide by. Vasisa, Pasuk Yud, Vasisa pi adavar, and you will do in accordance to the word asher yagidu lecha, which they will tell to you, mina malka mahu, from that place, asher yivchar Hashem, which Hashem has chosen, v'shamarta lasos, you should be careful to do it, kechol asher yirucha, all which they will teach you. So the Torah is telling us, whatever they tell you to do, you have to do. Pasuk Yud Aleph, this is the famous part of the Pasuk, one of the famous ideas, apia Torah, according to the teaching of the Torah, asher yirucha, which they will teach you, v'al mishpat, according to the judgments, asher yomru lecha, which they will tell to say to you, taseh, you will do. Lo sasar min hadavar, do not stray, do not turn from the thing, asher yagid lecha, which they tell to you, yamin usmol, right or left. We'll go into that in Rashi in a minute, a little bit more detail, just finishing it up here, pasuk yud beis. Va'ish, and a man, asher yasev is zadon, which intentionally does, Levilti Shemo al Kohen Ha'omim Dishari Sham, as Hashem Lokecha, that does intentionally ignores, in a sense, does not listen to the Kohen who stands there to serve there for Hashem your God, or a Shofet, or to the judge. Umeisa Ishahu, that man will surely be, will die. Uviar Taharam Yisrael, and you will destroy the evil from among Bnei Israel. So we see that a person, you're given a ruling, and you intentionally ignore the ruling. The consequence is death. You're supposed to be put to death because we cannot have such a situation where the chachamim, the rabbis, are giving us rulings that we're supposed to, in a halacha, and that we decide to ignore it on purpose. The entire nation will hear and they will see. And therefore, it will not this act of intentionally ignoring will not go on for afterwards. And Rashi points out here what it means: the entire nation will see and will hear. That it was done at the regal. So the entire nation would be there at the alos regal for the shlosh regalim in Harz HaBayis, and everybody would see. So Rashi points out here this unusual language, asher yagidu lecha in pasuk yud aleph, asher yagidu lecha yamin u'smol, whichever they tell you, right or left. And Rashi says on this pasuk, afilu omer lecha ayamin shu u'smol, even if they would tell you that your right is your left, v'al u'smol shu yamin, that your left is your right. Even if they seemingly got it completely backwards in the most obvious of ways, you still have to listen. The kol shekain, and therefore certainly Rashi says, kishomer lecha yamin yamin v'asimol simol. when they tell you your right is your right and your left is your left, certainly you have to listen to that. So, right, it is based on a sifrei, and the Malbim is going to explain this a little bit more, and he's going to explain to you the way I'm about to explain it also. Taking the Rashi and the sifrei at a very simple understanding seems to be that whatever you think is right, if they tell you differently, you got to follow it. Blind faith almost. You got to follow it no matter what. However, the question can be asked, why does this Medrash Sifrei and Rashi, therefore quoting it, use the example in the Torah, I mean it's based on, of right and left? Why not day or night? Land or sea? Why pick, the Torah doesn't use anything at random, there's a reason. Why specifically the examples of right or left? Makes sense. So the Malbim explaining the Sifrei as follows. And I always try to do this in the classroom, and it's a famous example when you want to try to create peace between two people that are having a fight. You hold up a ball, and you have two people standing opposite ends of the table, and you ask the person on one side, "What color is this ball?" And you say, look at it, and you say, it's black. And you say to the other person, "What color is it?" "It's white." You're looking at the same ball in front, but the ball is two different colors and two halves. So the person, a different perspective. So if you ask somebody right now, if I said, "Everybody, please raise your right hand," and you did that, and I said, "No, that's your left hand." And so they're looking around. No, it's my. So everybody turns around then. It's all different perspective. Day or night is not a perspective issue. Water or land is not a perspective. Right or left, though, is a perspective. And what we're being told here, and the Torah is telling us, is that you have to have the emunah and the chachamim. Because even though it seems to be almost counterintuitive sometimes what they'll be telling us, we have to realize they're coming from a different perspective. And if we could see their perspective, then we'd understand that what they're telling us is right and left is left. And they're not telling us the opposite. It's just coming from a different perspective. Which is important to understand as a general rule when we get to this idea that we hear things the rabbis are telling us to do, and it seems so opposite, certain halacha seems to be counterintuitive, we have to understand that there's a das Torah, there's an understanding, they're coming from an experience, an understanding that makes it work. I remember when my second year in Eretz Yisrael, my parents came, it was my sister's birthday for bat mitzvah, so they decided to come visit me in Eretz Yisrael. So my father went around to visit a bunch of Rosh Yeshivas and Gedolim, and I remember one of them saying, it was a principal of one of the seminaries, was saying that he used to meet often with one of the Gedolim, I don't remember which one. And he would have a discussion, and whatever he thought, this individual thought, would be the correct way of doing it, whatever reasons, the Gadol would say almost just the opposite, and always worked out. Always. So the person explained, he didn't think it was because the person was always 100% right by the logic itself, necessarily. But Hashem made it that if this is what he said needed to be done, and you had that proper emunah, it would happen in such a form. Hashem would make it work out in such a form. So perhaps even you could say that even if maybe there was a mistake, but Hashem will make it all work out in the end. The Gemara Yerushalmi in Brachos brings down Al Pi HaTorah. He gives a mashal. He says the king sends two messengers out to his country on his behalf. And he writes a letter with each of them to show the people. On one it says, do not believe anything this individual says unless he brings you my signature along with it. If my signature is not upon what he writes, it says, don't follow it. So the other one he says, even without my signature, do whatever he says to do. So the Gemara Yerushalmi explains this as a mashal to two different types of leadership we have in Bnei Israel. One which is discussed in this parsha of Shoftim and was mentioned, somebody asked the question yesterday, the day before, about the idea of a Navi Sheker. How are we supposed to believe? When is he a Navi Sheker, a Navi Emes? So he says, a Navi, we wait till he brings the signature, that miracle, that sign, which is a little bit interesting because the Rambam writes in one of his letters that we're talking about the Mashiach, we don't rely on miracles to tell us that he is the Mashiach. That doesn't help. That doesn't mean anything. But seemingly, this Gemara Yerushalmi wants to say that the Nevi'im, or certain leaders, we don't go blind faith in what they say. However, the other half is the Beis Din, the Chachamim. When we come to them and they tell us, they make a decree, they make a rule, we're supposed to follow it even if we don't necessarily, they don't perform a miracle for it. The Gezeiros, the Takanas, we follow those blindly, with complete faith. Also in this pasuk, it says in pasuk Yidal, "Lo sasar min ha-davar asher yagidu lecha." Do not stray, do not turn from any of the things which they tell to you. There's a question that's brought up often. Commonly, it's brought up by Chanukah. Chanukah is a mitzvah de rabbanon. The rabbis enacted it's a yom tov de rabbanon. Purim, Chanukah, all de rabbanon. And what happens? We come to light the menorah, and we say the bracha. Asher kedishanu mitzvah tzivanu l'hadlik ner shel Chanukah. One obvious question is, where does Hashem command us to light the menorah? So you could say maybe it's referring to the Mishkan when Aaron was commanded, the Kohen Gadol was commanded to light. But simply, where is the commandment? So they explain, based on this pasuk lo sasur min ha-davar, that this is almost the entrance way for where the Chachamim have the rights to make other decrees or add on to certain things. And from this pasuk, therefore, it's as if the Torah commanded it at some level, to the point where we would even say in a bracha, Asher kedisham mitzvah sav, which you commanded us because of the mitzvah of lo sasur min ha-davar, Asher yagidu lecha, that you cannot go away from what they've told you to say. So this pasuk here, again, you'll find often reference when we're dealing with inyanim, ideas that the Chachamim established, and when you go against what the Chachamim say, it's because of a din deraisa of lo sasur min ha-davar. You can't go away from what the Chachamim say, which gives us that idea of understanding the trust in the emunah in the Chachamim. Right, that's where, right. So that is where this is brought down from. Meaning the Gemara Brachos in your Testament base says this is the pasuk we see the din and the rabbanon, and the Gemara Shabbos in Chav Gimel and Aleph. I don't memorize; I just had it in my notes here. But he brought it down as the references this as the source for Chanukah lighting. In Gemara Shabbos, the second parak is where you're in Chanukah, the halachas of Chanukah. I remember my first year in Eretz Yisrael, a little before Chanukah, somebody in the yeshiva, it was a brand new yeshiva, made a siyum on Moed, some short mesechta, and he made a big siyum. So my night sitter Chavrusa said, let's learn something, and maybe we'll make a siyum also. So I said, sure, what do you want to learn? He said, it's Chanukah time, we'll learn Chanukah. And then we realized there's really not much Gemara on Chanukah. It's a couple blot in the middle of Bamem Elikim when it talks about lighting Shabbos candles, it talks then about lighting Chanukah candles. It wasn't discussed in the Gemara itself. So we ended up, after a week of deciding that wasn't really going to work, we decided we were going to do Maseches Megillah, and we ended up making a Siyum. It was our first Siyum right before Tanis Esther. It was a big deal. But so that's how I found the Chanukah is discussed primarily really in Gemara Shabbos right there in the second parak. I want to change gears slightly right now. Touched upon it yesterday. Somebody gave me the idea when we were talking. We've now into the month of Elul and preparing for teshuva and coming for the king. And yes, and when we were talking about the Aras and the end and the Ramban's understanding about the final pasuk and Shashayakim that you should establish the Torah, means these curses only come upon if you don't have a munah that these mitzvos, you don't believe in the mitzvos themselves, as opposed to saying, I made a mistake. So whenever the beginning of the school year comes, I give this kids four stories to try to help get a picture of how one should proceed in the process of thinking of going into it. The first story is a friend of mine, his name was Rick. He had a drinking problem. For the kids, it's usually drinking apple juice. He always spills it down his shirt. But he had a drinking problem. Some of the kids figure out what I mean. But he had a drinking problem, and he decided it was time for him to get help. So he goes in to the AA to get some assistance, and he comes in to the receptionist and he says, hi, my name is Rick and I have a drinking problem. The receptionist sticks out his hand and says, congratulations. Rick looks at the person. Maybe you didn't hear me right. I said, my name's Rick and I have a drinking problem. Congratulations. So Rick at this point is thinking, this person also has a drinking problem. He might be drinking too much. It's like, do you not speak English? Rick, drinking problem. Congratulations. Why are you congratulating me? He says, well, you admitted you had a problem. That's the first step. That's the first story. The second story is there was a five-alarm fire in the city, and the fire department was there for hours trying to put out the flames, and they would get control over one area, and then it would start up again, and it was going on for hours. Finally, the head of the fire department realized, what's the source of the fire? It's a gas leak. So they called the gas company, they shut off the gas in the area, which they probably should have done immediately anyway. And within an hour or so, the fire was completely out. Second story. At this point, the kid's like, what's the point of all this? The third story, different friend of mine, John, he had an idea for a business, but he needed some income to start up. So he goes to somebody who was an entrepreneur, and he asked him for a loan of $1,000 to start his business. But he said, okay, I'll give you $1,000 for a year, and we'll see what happens. End of the year comes, and my friend John comes to him, and he's asked how he did. He says, well, not so great. I blew all the money. He says, but I realized what happened. I would go out every day for breakfast and lunch and dinner to really fancy restaurants, and I'd buy a new suit every day and a new tie to match it. And I realized that, you know, as long as I don't have a drinking problem, I don't have to get a new tie every single day, a new suit. And, you know, there are other places I can get breakfast. They actually, you know, you can get a box of cereal and bring it home. You don't have to go out. You know, you don't have to go to the Starbucks coffee. I can get a Dunkin' Donuts coffee, maybe. It doesn't have to be the more expensive thing. So I realize where some of my mistakes are. So the guy says, okay, it sounds like, you know, you realize your mistakes and for your business. So I'll give you another $1,000 and we'll see how you do this year. So end of year comes to John and says, how do you do? He says, I did better. I only have $400 left. But again, I realize some of my mistakes. I realize that, you know, I don't have to go out even for lunch every day. I can actually buy bread and make my own sandwiches at home and pack up lunch. And, you know, there's a washing machine and I can actually do laundry. So, you know, I don't have to go to the dry cleaners with my suits that I'm not buying every single day. And I realize some of my mistakes and how I can do better. So the guy's like, okay, so you're making progress. We have $400 left over. Last year we had nothing. You seem to have a plan of how to improve. Here's another $1,000. Year goes by and person comes to John and says, how do you do? He says, excellent. I said, I was really careful with my spending, and I have, you know, $800 left over. So I realized, so he says, okay, but, you know, we're trying to make money here. You're still losing. He says, well, I realize there's this, you know, this thing called a bank, and you can invest money in it and investments, and I now know that I only need $200 to run the business, so I'll take the other $800, and I'll invest it, and then overall I'll be able to have that money to spend later. The guy's like, okay, well, see you. You're definitely growing. You're making you have a plan how to make some money now. So here's another $1,000. Year goes by, comes back to him, says, how do you do? He says, excellent, I have $1,400 now. So the guy says, fantastic. I see you've really learned how to manage it all and make money. Here's $1,000,000. And he goes off to invest his $1,000,000. It's the third story. At this point, the kids are really confused, like, wait a second, what's going on here? The fourth story, and for the kids, I apologize, I usually have to explain this in a little more detail. I say, a mother was one time driving, and she had to drop off some mail in a mailbox. And at this point, I usually have to describe to the kids what mail is, you know, with the sticker. And a mailbox is like this big blue monster where you have to constantly check to make sure the thing actually was swallowed down by it. And I have to explain to them, it's an amazing idea that you can put you can put something in one place and it ends up some other place. It's, you know, you put it here and it ends up at somebody else's house. But so I explained to them what a mailbox is, and a letter and a stamp. And I said, so the mother had their little child in the car. And the car, she kept the car running and closed the door just to quickly hop out and put the mail in the mailbox. And she comes back and tries to open the door, but the door was locked. The child locked the car. And the child's screaming, says, Mom, you mean to get me out? And the mother's like, I want to. He says, so get me out. He says, I can't. He says, why not? You locked the door. So the kids now are completely confused and say, what's going on? So I explained to them, this is the attitude and the thought process one has to go into Elul, to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur with. What does Hashem expect from us, practically? We had a year, we did our mitzvahs, hopefully more than the Averis, we tried to improve ourselves. We go to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, Hashem really expects us to be perfect. We said, God, we're going to nail it all. All 613, no more Averis, all mitzvahs, we got it, we learned it all, we know exactly what we're doing. It's not practical. It's not realistic. If anything, we're going to set ourselves up for failure and we'll not get anything accomplished. The first thing we have to do is recognize where the faults are, what the problems are. Say, these are some of the issues I have. So you come before Hashem, and you say, Hashem, listen, I have done a lot of good things this year, made a lot of progress, but these are the areas that I see that I'm still having a lot of difficulty in, and I'm going to focus on a couple of them. So the first thing is just admit the problem, admit where the problem is. The second thing is, so now I said, okay, I have trouble getting up in the morning. Great. So what are you going to do about it? I'm going to set an alarm. Was that really the source of the problem? It's like, well, probably not. I go to bed late. Why do you go to bed late? So for the kids, like, well, I'm doing my homework. Well, why are you doing your homework so late? Well, because I didn't start it so late, till like, you know, 10 o'clock. Why didn't you start at 10 o'clock? Well, I was playing video games till 9:55. Why are you playing video games till 9:50? So you have to find the true source of the fire, of the problem. Because until you can find the true source, you're wasting your time. It's not going to accomplish anything. So the first thing, you have your list, the items you want to work on, and you do some true introspection, you figure out what the real source of the problem is. So now that when you start attacking it, you're not attacking something that's still being fueled by the energy of the problem. The third step is develop a plan. Not a plan for perfection, but a plan showing progress. And if a person can consistently show the progress that he goes to Hashem, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, through the month of Elul, he's been thinking about it, he says, listen, Hashem, you know, I realize my problem is that I really like my video games, and therefore I'm going to bed late, and I'm not getting up on time, and I'm missing davening, I'm getting to school late, and whatever the situation is. But I developed a plan. I'm going to, you know, limit the amount. I'm going to have an incentive to play the video games. I'm going to do whatever the plan is, charts, incentives, rewards, punishments, whatever you need to do. And I'm not looking for perfection the first time. I'm looking to do better. So right now, I get out of bed one time a day, you know, once a week on time. That's usually for Shabbos because, you know, davening's not until 9:15, so it's easy to get up for then. It's actually interesting. The kids' Shulchan Aruch brings down for Hilchos Shabbos that it's an idea to get up a little bit later on Shabbos morning than you do during the weekday for davening. So you should have a little bit of menucha. Not to the point where you'll miss the Zman Kriya Shema, but just a little bit. So anyway, so he says, once a week I had no problem getting up on time for davening. I wasn't playing video games Friday night till 9:55. But this time, this year, I'm really going to work for the first couple months. I'm going to work on, you know, getting 2 times a week on time. So you work on that. I have a plan so that what happens is when you come at the end of the year and Hashem says, and you see, you look back at what you did, and he says, well, listen, I made progress, and I see still where some of the difficulties are, and I have a plan how to attack that. Will you invest in me for another year? And Hashem says, I see progress. You're growing. It's not what I'm looking for yet, but we're going in the right direction. You're worth investing another year of life for. So Hashem gives you another year. So those are the first three stories. You have the idea of admitting where the problems are, recognizing what the difficulties are, not saying you're fixing anything, just admitting the problem. Trying to think in a couple areas what the source of those issues are so you can figure out a plan of attack that's going to be effective. And then going before Hashem and saying, look, I've made progress. Not perfection, not everything, but an area of progress. The final mashal is from a Mishnah in Yuma. We go before Hashem. And you say, Hashem, listen, here's my whole laundry list of things that I really should be working on, but I'm not getting to them all. Here are 2 or 3 of them that I'm going to work on. And this is I really thought about all Elo. I really thought hard, long and hard what my problem is and why. Here's my plan how to improve it. And I show you, look, last year, this is how I did last year. Here's how I did this year. We invest another year. And Hashem says, I'd love to, but I can't. You're up there. I just went to a shir and I heard a whole thing how this would really work. What's going on? He says, I can't. I said, well, why not? So, well, you lock the door. What do you mean I lock the door? I don't see any doors here. I heard about gates being locked, but, you know, what's going on here? What do you mean I lock the door? And you're God. You can do anything you want. He says, well, you lock the door. I can't let you in. He says, I don't understand. He says, the veras that you're coming to me are being adam l'chavero, between man and a fellow man. He says, I can forgive you for anything you've done to me. But the veras that you've done between man and a fellow man, I can't forgive you until you get mechila from that individual. Until then, you've locked the door. And as much as I'd love to open the door and get you out and take you out of there, I can't until you do that final step also. So those are just to help a little bit, I guess, put a mindset as we enter the month of Elul. Rosh Hashanah is here before you even know it. At least in my mind, you know, school starts and then Rosh Hashanah is right afterwards. Just to help give that mindset of how should one go into the day of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. Like going back again to the Ariz, the Ramban says, it's the idea of having emunah in Hashem, that Hashem, and the emunah in the mitzvahs that they're there. We learn here, having the emunah in the chachamim of what they tell us to do. Hashem commanded us, Hashem commanded them and told them to help guide us. They're not looking for perfection. The Torah here says, what's the punishment? Va'ish asher yasev is zadon. It's a person who does it intentionally. He says, I'm not listening to them. I don't believe this. That's where we get into the problems. Hashem just wants our best effort. He wants us to succeed. He wants to see progress. He wants to see a plan. He wants us to have the emunah, the faith in Him that we're going to make that progress. But perfection is not what Hashem is looking for us. And I think that's one of the biggest problems that people, that we have, kids especially, they come in with that mindset of perfection. You have a student that they come in, they need to get perfect hundreds on their test. And if they get a 99, 98, it's devastating, they're done. So it did fantastic. I always feel the worst when I give a kid a 99 on a test. I said, my heart goes out. He's like, one more point. They argue for hours of that one other point. And I said, it's not going to make a difference. And you're like, big picture grade, not making any difference. You're still getting an A, whatever, in the class. It's not. But it drives them crazy because we have that idea of perfection and they missed it. Again, what Hashem's asking for us is not the perfection. Hashem's asking for us to strive and make progress so that Hashem has something to invest in for the other year. But that all depends, again, on our own actions, the course we take to preparing for that between man and his fellow man. Just because we have a little more time, and I'll just go back to one other idea in the parsha here. At the end of the parsha, we come out, it's an interesting thing. This actually, when you get to Kisava, you'll see parts of this, you'll see the exact opposite in the curses that Moshe gives. It's a famous idea. Moshe Rabbeinu, we're told that Bnei Yisrael, when they go out to war, the Kohen and the Shoftim were going to make a declaration. He says, anybody who built a new house, or built a house, I should say, or has a house, actually, the Darshan had a house built for them and did not have a chance to live in it, should return back. Lest somebody else comes and lives in it before you. If somebody planted in a vineyard, it's at the, it's in Perichov. And it says, let's quickly find it here. It's in Pasuk Dalet. Hey, it's where it starts. V'dibru ha-shotrim, Perichov, Pasuk Dalet. V'dibru ha-shotrim el ha'am, the nation, the shotrim, the officers will speak to the nation, they're more saying, mi ha'ish asher bona vayis chadash, who is the man that has built a new house, v'lo chanoch, and he has not inaugurated it. Yelech, you should go, v'yashal v'esu, you should return to his house. Pentamos ba'melchamah, lest he die in war. V'ish'acher yechanchenu. And some other man should inaugurate it. And then Pasuk Vav, Umi ha'ish asher nato kerem velo chilolo, who is the man who has planted a vineyard and has not had a chance to redeem it, meaning the fourth year fruits. Yelef v'yosh l'veso, he should go return to his house. Pen yamus b'melchamah, lest he die in war. V'ish acher yechalolenu, another man will come and redeem the fourth year fruits. Umi ha'ish asher eras isha, who is the man that has gotten betrothed to a woman. And he has not taken her, he should go back and return to his house. He die in war, and some other man shall take her. And then the next pasuk is an interesting pasuk here. So we have these three very clear things, which in truth, in a few weeks when you get to Kisavo, you'll see that Moshe tells Bnei Israel, you're going to go out, and you're going to be killed, and some other man's going to take your house, and some other man's going to take your vineyard, and some other man's going to take your wife. All these things, almost the exact opposite of what we're being told right now, will happen. So we see that these three things are not small things. These are real concerns, real issues. And then it says, V'yosva shotrim l'daber alam, and the officers added on, and they continue to speak to the nation. V'amr, they said, Mi ha'ish ha'yare, who is the man that is afraid? V'rach ha'levav, and is weak of heart. Yelech, you should go, v'yosh l'vesh, and return to his house. V'lo yimases levav echov, and therefore you should not melt the heart of his brothers, kilvav, like his heart. Meaning, someone who's afraid of his, generally say, of his fears of his averos that he has committed, he should also return. However, what we did was the Torah does it in a way with such compassion that we include them with three other groups of people. A person is returning; nobody's going to know that he just, oh, maybe he just planted a vineyard. I don't know. I wasn't in his backyard recently. Or maybe he just got a part of his house. He just got built, or maybe he just became engaged. So nobody's going to know the reasoning for it. So we take a very big sensitivity to that individual, that they shouldn't be embarrassed that they're going back with the other people that are Yari Virach Levov. But at the same time, we see there's these three areas where things that were a way that a person could, in their back of their mind, have ulterior motives when fighting and concerns. That he's not going to go out fully and fight out of fear because he's concerned about somebody else taking that which he had worked for, that he had built, or the woman he had betrothed. And we see that from the flip side, the fear of that, from the fact that later on, those are the three things that Moshe says is going to happen. Each one of those things is going to take effect, that your house that you built, somebody else is going to take. The vineyard that you planted, somebody else is going to have for the fourth year. The woman that you are betrothed to, some other man will take. So we see the sensitivity, and we also see the level that Hashem's concerns here of war were not one of military numbers. And if you go to Navi, and when Gidon comes out to fight originally, I think he had over 32,000 soldiers. And even then, they were a small number compared to the numbers that they were fighting against. And Hashem says to him, you have too many people, send the bunch in the back. So Gidon says, listen, anybody's afraid, go back. And he's left with, I think, about 1,000. And it's 1,000. So Gidon's like, we've got to be crazy. And Gidon already, if you look at the Navi, he always had a sense of nervousness with regard to going out there. He believed in Hashem, but he always wanted reassurance. And so what happens? Hashem says, still too many people. So this is what I want you to do. I want you to go down to the river and have them drink water there. And he says, there are going to be some people which are going to lay on their stomachs and drink, and some are going to be on their knees and drink. Those that are laying on their stomachs are ones that are used to lying on their stomachs before Avodah Zarah, and those that are on their knees are different. And after that, you'll separate them. Those that were that you can tell used to serve Avodah Zarah versus those that did not. And after all that was said and done, so we started with about 32,000, Gideon was left with 300. So if you thought 32,000 was small, now we're left with 300. And Hashem says, okay, you're going to take these 300, that's all I need. And what was Hashem's reasoning? Hashem says, I don't want anybody to think that this was a military victory out of might or strategy. It was one of pureness. And Gideon comes down, and Hashem then tells him, he says, you're going to divide up into three separate groups. So now we have, you're surrounding them each with 100 on each side. And you'll take a shofar, and you'll take an earthen pottery, and you'll break them, and you'll have torches, and you'll scare them. There'll be a scare tactic. I believe the Jews did it during the Six-Day War. On the Jordan side, they set up a whole thing, the sound system, to make it sound like there were thousands of troops there when there were very few. And it held the Jordanians off for enough time for the reinforcements to come back to fight and become victorious. But the idea is, again, Hashem's not concerned about the military might. Hashem says, I want those that have the emunah in me that know that I'm going to take care of them and have that confidence in them. And through that emunah, you'll be successful in fighting the wars, not through the military might of the strongest and the bravest in that sense. So I wish everybody a wonderful Shabbos. Thank you.